At Avocado, we know that not all mattresses are created equal. While other beds trap heat, ours sets it free. Made without polyurethane foams and crafted with natural latex, cotton, and wool. Breathable, comfortable, and supportive. No overheating, just clean, organic sleep that performs. Save 15% on our award-winning mattresses this July 4th sale. Avocado, celebrate organic. Shop at avocadomattress.com or leading retailers nationwide.
The Hard Shoulder with Kira Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, we are joined by Ambassador John Bolton, former US National Security Advisor to Donald Trump in his first term and former US Ambassador to the United States, United Nations, I should say, under George W. Bush. Ambassador Bolton, thanks very much for joining us today. A nice straightforward question to begin with. Where are we at with the war in Iran?
Well, I think Trump is at a loss as to what to do at the moment. It was not clear to me ever that he really knew what his objectives were when he got started. I thought originally it was regime change, which I think would be the correct policy, but he's obviously wandered away from that. I think the Israeli objective from the beginning was always regime change, which Trump was at least content to allow them to do. But where he is now, because he agreed to a ceasefire that I think was badly mistaken, and he's worried not now about international strategy, he's worried about domestic American politics with prices at the pump of gasoline rising, concern about its impact on the midterm congressional elections, and he's at a loss as to how to get out. He wants to get out, but he's deeply afraid of making a deal that would look like Obama's 2015 deal, for which I think he'd be justifiably criticized. So he's in a dilemma of his own creation, and despite meetings with his national security advisors yesterday afternoon at the White House, we haven't heard any outcome of that. There's certainly no proposal on the table to negotiate with Iran that's acceptable at the moment. And as I say, Trump's just at a loss as to what to do next.
Just before I ask you more about regime change, I'm curious because you feel Donald Trump did not know what his objectives were going into the war. It does beg a very obvious question. Why did he go into the war in the first place?
Well, I think he believed, perhaps erroneously, that if he hit the Iranian regime hard, they would crumble. I wish that were true too, but it's not true, and it never was true. Regime change takes an awful lot of preparation and hard work, none of which he engaged in. He didn't make the case to the American people. And it's not just one speech. It's making the case over time. He didn't make the case to Congress. He didn't brief America's allies, and not just NATO. He didn't brief the Gulf Arab states. He didn't brief our Pacific allies like Japan and South Korea that get a lot of their oil and gas from the Gulf. And he didn't work with the Iranian opposition, which is absolutely critical. So notwithstanding his rhetoric, he has now turned to focusing exclusively on the nuclear issue, and even there, just on a small piece of it. So as I say, all this says to me that he wants out, but he can't figure out how to get it in a way that allows him to declare victory and still pass the smile test.
You have been writing in today's Wall Street Journal in relation to this issue. Negotiation won't end Iran's nuclear threat. Trump is repeating one of Obama's mistakes, focusing on uranium and ignoring plutonium. Just explain to us the points you've been making in the Wall Street Journal today.
Well, most of the discussion I think people are probably familiar with is Iran's uranium enrichment capabilities. That is to say, taking natural uranium and enriching it to a high degree of the U-235 isotope, which is the fissile isotope that goes boom when you set a nuclear weapon off. But there's an alternative path to nuclear weapons through plutonium, which is essentially a man-made element. And plutonium is one of the byproducts of nuclear reactors, peaceful nuclear reactors that provide power. When the fuel is spent after a substantial period in the reactor, it's created all kinds of new elements, particularly plutonium, which is also fissile in almost all of its isotopes. So if you reprocess the plutonium out of the spent fuel of a nuclear reactor, you can make nuclear weapons out of it. And right now, according to Russian nuclear experts, there's about enough plutonium in the spent fuel at the Bushehr nuclear reactor to make at least 200 nuclear weapons. So while everybody's worried about uranium, Iran is sitting there with the capability of making 200 plutonium-based nuclear weapons right now.
I've no doubt you're right in what you're saying. Am I too cynical in saying the last thing Donald Trump wants now is to open up another issue, and that he will just continue to ignore that point you're making?
Well, I think he probably will. So have a lot of other people who have sleptwalked past the plutonium route to nuclear weapons for a long time. Don't forget the history of rogue states trying to get nuclear weapons until recently has been primarily through plutonium processed out of the spent fuel of nuclear reactors. Saddam Hussein started that until the Israelis bombed the Oseiroc reactor in Baghdad in 2001. The Iranians themselves tried building a reactor. Actually, the North Koreans were building them a reactor in the Syrian desert until the Israelis bombed that one in 2007. But North Korea still has its own Yongbyon reactor from which it's possible to reprocess plutonium, and Iran has Bushehr. So this problem is out there, and the fact that Trump or anybody else ignored it doesn't diminish the danger that it poses for rogue states, or really any state with nuclear reactors. Even if they're for peaceful purposes, they can still process plutonium unless that spent fuel is taken away as early as possible.
You believe regime change is required in Iran. Can that be achieved without putting soldiers on the ground in Iran?
Yes, I think it can. I mean, Trump has taken it from the beginning, and whether I agree or disagree with it really isn't the point. He clearly was never going to put boots on the ground to do that. But the opposition in Iran is extraordinarily widespread. The regime is more unpopular than it's been than at any point since 1979 when it took power. The young people are unhappy. Women are unhappy. All of the people are unhappy because of the wretched state of the economy. The ethnic groups are unhappy. And so the opposition is throughout all 31 of Iran's provinces, but it's not well organized. And it needs help in resources, in telecommunications, money, weapons. If we had been working, as we should have been, not just in the days after the attacks began, but really in the months and, for that matter, years in advance of that, to help bolster the opposition, I think we'd be in a better place. But nonetheless, the opposition is so strong that as we weaken the institutions of Iranian state power, like the Revolutionary Guard Corps in particular, and its besieged militia, who are the thugs that massacre their own people in the streets. Back in January, they machine gun demonstrators, killing upwards of 40,000 by most estimates. As the regime's capability to do that is diminished, the hand of the opposition is strengthened. And I think that's what we should continue to focus on, because the ideology of the regime is what's really threatening here. It's support for terrorism. It's pursuit of nuclear weapons. It's effort to close the Strait of Hormuz and inflict grave damage on the international economy. These are the marks of a fanatic ideology that until that's removed from power is not going to relent.
Does Trump have the patience, the strategic thinking to follow that course of action, do you think?
Well, I'm very skeptical of it. The one thing that could keep him focused is that he sees his political future on the line here. If Republicans lose control of the House and the Senate, and it certainly looks likely that we will lose control of the House and quite possibly the Senate, Trump's going to have a very unhappy last 2 years in office. So this is what his focus is at the moment. Obviously, King Charles is visiting, and we had the attempted assassination on Saturday night. So he is worried about other things. But his real focus is what's going to happen in November. And that's why he's so unable to come to a decision about how to handle Iran. While he'd like to put it behind him, he knows if he doesn't do it in a convincing way, it will just make his political problems in November even worse.
Do you believe, regardless of what Donald Trump does, whether he goes down the road that you're advocating or whether he continues with these negotiations, and I know you've been very critical of them, do you believe that we're not looking at any early solution to the issues in Iran, the issues in the Straits of Hormuz?
No, I don't see any early resolution, because I don't think you can trust the regime one way or the other. And if we could just take 1 second on the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, you know, it's customary for critics of the United States to tell us continuously how we're violating some international law or another. Just to be clear, when a littoral state like Iran closes what has long been recognized as an international waterway, notwithstanding their territorial claims or the territorial claims of Oman, the Strait of Hormuz is an international waterway that is open under basic principles of freedom of the seas to the commercial traffic of all nations. So when Iran asserts sovereignty or hegemony over the strait, it is in flat violation of international law. So for people who care about that, they ought to be strongly against what Iran's doing here.
You mentioned 1979 earlier on, and what happened there proved the undoing of Jimmy Carter's presidency. I mean, could this prove to be the undoing of Donald Trump's presidency, do you think?
Well, I have to say there's a possibility. I noticed yesterday Chancellor Merz of Germany said that the Revolutionary Guard was humiliating Trump. They may be humiliating him. Look, the Revolutionary Guard have been dealt substantial setbacks. Nobody can underestimate the consequences of the U.S.-Israeli bombing of the institutions of Iran's state power. You know, there aren't foreign reporters running all over Iran like there are in the Gulf states and in Israel, who can see every window in a high-rise building that's broken. But the regime has been very badly damaged. But in their eyes, as long as they're still in power, they don't care about the people of Iran. They care about keeping power. They are still in power. And yes, that I think would be construed by many around the world as humiliating to Trump. And if that perception spreads in the United States, I think that would be corrosive on his public support.
Is there a way out for Donald Trump? I mean, I know what you're advocating, but where do you see him ultimately? What do you ultimately think he will try to do? Will he try and cobble together some kind of agreement with the current regime?
I think that's the most likely outcome. I mean, one alternative is to use military force to open the Strait of Hormuz, to permit the export of Gulf Arab oil and gas, while keeping the blockade on shipments out of Iranian ports. I think we've got the capability to clear the strait, and if he could do that, he would continue to squeeze Iran's economy, bereft of all oil revenues, but the Gulf Arabs could be shipping, they'd be getting their revenues, and there'd be considerably more oil on global markets, thereby bringing the price down. I don't think he wants to do that. As I say, I think he wants to put this whole thing behind him. But for future reference, if we don't oust Iran from the control they assert over the Strait of Hormuz now, they're going to turn it on and off like a light switch henceforward. Because if we're not prepared to use force now, who will use it in the future?
Okay. Can I switch briefly to the war in Ukraine? I read a piece that you wrote earlier in the year where you said Putin thinks that he has near mastery over Donald Trump. Tell us why you believe that. And you go on to say not because of any compromising material, but because his KGB training allows him to play on Trump's weaknesses. I'm kind of fascinated for you to explore that a little bit more.
Well, Trump thinks he and Putin are friends. Trump thinks he and Xi Jinping are friends. He thinks he and Kim Jong-un of North Korea are friends. I don't think any of the three of them think they're friends with Trump, but Trump sees international relations through the prism of personal relations among the leaders. So in Trump's view, if he and Putin are good friends, then U.S.-Russia state-to-state relations are good. Now, look, their personal relations play a role in international affairs, just like in everything else. I'm not saying they're irrelevant, but I'm saying people like Putin don't see the world the same way Donald Trump does. Putin has a very clear idea of what he thinks Russian national interests are. I think they're radically opposed to our view of how you get peace and security in Europe. But what Putin's after is advancing Russian national interest. And what he looks for are weaknesses in his opposite numbers. And in Trump, he sees somebody who's over his head. He must sense how Trump wants to be friends. And as I said, like a good KGB agent, he's going to exploit his opponent's weaknesses. And that's how he's been able to play Trump again and again and again. Looking at the summit in Alaska, looking at their conversations repeatedly over the Ukraine, Putin has been able to get Trump to see things largely his way, not all the time, not entirely, but in ways that are unparalleled in any prior American leader. And I don't like that outcome at all, but I don't see any evidence at the moment that Putin's hold over Trump has weakened.
And do you see in the short to medium term any prospect of peace in Ukraine?
I do not. Putin has been advised by his military for quite some time that the Ukrainian military will crack this spring or summer. So, okay, we're into spring. They haven't cracked yet. Actually, they're doing very well in many respects. So there will be a reckoning inside the Kremlin at some point, perhaps by July or something like that this summer. But bear in mind what Putin's objective is here. It's not just to pick up a few square miles of Ukrainian territory. He's trying to recreate the Russian Empire. And for any kind of Russian nationalist like that, you can't have a Russian Empire without the Ukraine. So his desire to conquer the country is very real. And he may not be making much progress at the moment toward that objective. And he may even accept a ceasefire at some point. But he hasn't given up. And just as the Kremlin was content to wait from 2014 when they made their first assault to 2022 when they made the second assault, it means they're prepared to wait years again to recover, regroup, and try a third invasion.
Two last very quick questions, Ambassador, because I know you're under time pressure. You've touched on the midterm elections already. Are you very pessimistic in terms of the outcome for the Republican Party? Obviously, we're still quite some time away from those elections, but are you quite pessimistic?
Well, I think people are worried that Republicans will lose control of the House. There's some possibility that they would lose control of the Senate as well. That would mean effectively the end of any domestic legislation for the remainder of Trump's term. And from his perspective personally, if Democrats gain control of the House, they're going to start multiple impeachment investigations, I think particularly focusing on allegations of personal corruption. So he has a lot at stake in these elections.
A very final question. And look, I'm very conscious hindsight is 2020 vision, but you were obviously initially a supporter of Donald Trump. If you had that time over again, knowing what you now know, would you have supported him? Do you think America is in a weaker place because of his presidency today?
Well, I don't think he's helpful. I didn't support him in 2016. I voted for him over Hillary Clinton. I didn't support him for the Republican nomination. And I think that's where a lot of Republicans started out, that they just thought, considering the alternative, they'd vote for Trump. But I think his popularity is falling. And I think a lot of Republicans, even those who today still say they support him, regret it.
Okay. Ambassador John Bolton, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Thank you for talking to The Hard Shoulder.
Well, thanks for having me.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric Range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.